If you have your Bible, or if you have a way to access your Bible on your app or whatever, we're going to be in John chapter 7 this morning, and today we're continuing kind of looking at this great big question, who is Jesus? And we're going to answer that question today. The title of our message today is A Man of Mystery. Now that sounds a little bit like, you know, James Bond, License to Kill or something like that, but it's not a strange spy novel-esque kind of thing. It is, in fact, just the word mystery. That if you were to say something about Jesus in his own day, one of the things you'd have to say about him is people didn't really know who he was. The crowds had flocked to hear him teach, and they had seen his great miracles, but they walked away because they didn't really know who he was. The disciples had gathered around him, his own disciples, and they didn't know who he was. His family that had raised him, that his brothers and sisters and everybody else, but they didn't really know who he was, the religious leaders who would try to kill him. One of the things you could say about the life of Jesus, one of the things you could say about the man Jesus is he was a mystery. That was true then, but it might also be true today. That to many people, who Jesus really is not known. They maybe know a little bit about him or they've heard his name, but they don't really know Jesus. And it may be even true that some people who come to church and hear the sermon or sing the songs and listen to the music, that Jesus is a man or Jesus is an idea sort of out there, but they don't really know who he is. One of the things the Bible tells us that Jesus actually came to do was to show us the Father. That his real mission was to introduce us to God and so that we could see who God the Father really is. And today is Father's Day. And you know, it's kind of interesting too, because the man of mystery is probably a title that you could put on most dads. You know, let's be honest. The kind of, you know, who is that strange guy that lives in the house with me or whatever? Cornell University was interested in time that dads spend with their kids. And we all know that quality time with kids is really an important thing. And Cornell University wanted to find out just the quantity of time that dads actually spend with their kids. And they did this very careful study, and they discovered that on average, daily, most fathers don't spend an hour with their kids. Most don't spend 30 minutes or even 15 minutes alone with their kids. In fact, they found not even 5 minutes. If the kid says, "Can I get a minute?" they don't even get a minute. Because the average father spends 37.7 seconds a day with their kids. That's an incredible statistic when you look at it. And you also think about what we know about how important it is. You know, maybe one of those kids was like that has a dad like that, said, you know, hey, my dad's a spiritual guy. You know, he believes in meditation. He says things like, sit down and shut up. This background to this is right at the very heart of this story today. Because one of the things that this story makes so clear to us is that when Jesus came into this world, one of the things that he did is he spent an immense amount of time with the Heavenly Father, and one of the things that he wanted to introduce us to so much is for us to know the man of mystery. Not just Jesus, but God the Father, the one who is unknown to so many, can be known by knowing Jesus. We start reading here in John chapter 7 in verse 1. In the midst of Jesus' ministry, we start right in the midst of it. It says in John chapter 7 verse 1, after this, Jesus went around in Galilee. He did not want to go about in Judea. Now here's the reason. Because the Jewish leaders there were looking for a way to kill him. It's a pretty good reason not to go. But when the Jewish festival of Tabernacles was near, tabernacles, it means tents. They would stay in these animal skin tents to celebrate the great Exodus. When the Jewish festival of Tabernacles was near, Jesus' brothers said to him, now here's a rare moment where we get to meet like Jesus' brothers. And they say to him, leave Galilee, go to Judea, so that your disciples there may see the works you do. No one who wants to become a public figure acts in secret. I mean, that makes sense, right? If you want to be famous, you got to leave the house, right? Since you're doing these things, show yourself to the world. You know, go public, go big. For even his own brothers did not believe in him. Therefore, Jesus told them, my time, and notice that word, how important it is. My time is not yet here. For you, any time will do. That's kind of a funny statement, isn't it? Like, any time will do for you. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me. Because I testify that its works are evil. You go to the festival, I'm not going up to this festival because my time has not yet fully come. And after he said this, he stayed in Galilee. Now, there's several lessons we're going to learn today about maybe fathers and mothers and everybody that wants to know the man of mystery. But number one is use time wisely. The word here for time in the Bible is actually a very important word. It's the word kairos. And there's two words for time, chronos and kairos. Chronos is the chronology of time. It means the sequences of time. It means like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. But kairos is a word for a season or even a divine time. And Jesus uses that word. He's saying, look, the appointed time, the divine time, the time that I'm going to go to the cross, that time hasn't come yet. But what's interesting is that in order for Jesus to be there at just the right time, he had to be in control of all of his time. Jesus' day planner, his calendar, was well mapped out. And so that he would put the things in place that needed to be in place. So maybe I could say it like this. One of the most important things any of us can do in our life is manage our time well. And if Jesus maybe was saying one thing to us today, it would be this. When it comes to time, don't waste it. The book of Proverbs is a book of wisdom, but it's not like the other wisdom books. In fact, if you sit down sometime and just start reading the Proverbs, the opening scene shows you that what you need to realize, it's the wisdom of a father speaking to his son. So whenever I read Proverbs, I just imagine, you know, King Solomon sitting in a big chair and getting his boy to come sit in his lap and say, now let me give you some advice. Let me tell you what you need to know when you grow up. And it covers all kinds of areas of life, including the use of our time. Proverbs chapter 20, Solomon's speaking to his son, and he says, don't waste your time. But he uses a particular word for it. I like this word. He says, don't be a sluggard. Now, sluggard is just kind of one of those words. You know, you just say it, and it kind of captures everything you need. Sluggard. I don't know about you, I don't even know what the word means, but I don't want to be that, you know. It just doesn't sound good. Slug, you know, doesn't sound good all by itself. Sluggards, Proverbs says, do not plow in season, so at harvest time they look and find nothing. Son, there's a farmer out there somewhere, and you know, he knows he needs to get his crops ready. He's got to go out in the field, and he's got to plant before the spring rain comes. But this farmer, he's just lazy. He's just a sluggard. He just sleeps in one morning, and he says, you know what, I'm going to do it tomorrow, but tomorrow never comes. And when it's time for his family to go get the harvest, and when it's time for them to eat and have food and be able to pay the bills and all that, he looks up, and he's run out of time. Don't be like that, son. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 4. That's true when it comes to money. That's true when it comes to employment. That's true when it comes to the economics of life. But it's also true when it comes to our family life, when it comes to our marriages. When I was in high school, there was a book that I never read that was always in the library. I always noticed it because it was like the biggest book in the library. It's War and Peace. Anybody ever read War and Peace? Okay, nobody, right? I mean, there may be one person. Anybody really actually read all of War and Peace? Okay, like probably no one that ever lived, right? I mean, even Leo Tolstoy didn't even read it, and he wrote it, you know? Tolstoy is considered to be one of the greatest writers ever. He was a Russian. He was a man of faith and a man of family. He'd been married for 50 years. When he looked across the table at his wife and said, why don't we dig out the love letters I wrote to you in the first 2 years of our marriage? They pulled out the love letters. Can you just imagine the letters written by this literary genius like Tolstoy that he'd written to his newly married wife, and how beautiful and flowing the words must have been, how romantic they were. And as they read those, though, they began to weep bitterly. Because as they thought back on those first two wonderful years of their marriage, they then thought about the arguments that crept in over the years and the coldness that developed in their relationship. And they began to think about all with regret how the last 48 years of their marriage had been a waste. So can I say this to you like this? When it comes to your time, use it wisely. Don't waste it. Or even maybe even more serious than that, don't blow it. Researchers are always trying to understand the kids and what they do and their relationship with their parents. And they ask the kids the question, would you rather spend time with dad or watch TV? Now, I know a lot of you in this room would kind of go like, I'd rather watch TV, to tell you the truth. But you would never say that at church, I'm sure. But they asked 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, and 6-year-olds, would you rather watch TV or spend time? 46% of kids said they would prefer TV. I read that and I kind of thought, you know, that's kind of good. You know, that means most kids would rather spend time with their dad. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to ask my kids this question this week. And, you know, I got them all in the car and we're driving down the road. And I'm thinking, I'm going to ask them, I'm going to get these profound answers from my children that I can use in my sermon on Sunday. This is going to be great. And I said, you know, what would you rather do? And I go through each one of them. What would you rather spend your time doing? Can I be just totally honest with you? I was blown away. All three of my boys said, I'd rather watch television. No, I'm just kidding. No, they all said, I'd rather play iPad. No, that's not what they said. They said, I'd rather spend time with you, Dad. And I mean, it's kind of like one of those moments where you just sort of go, like, I didn't really know that. Like, I forget how important my job is, just being a dad, just kind of being there with my kids. Like I forget that. Like, in the hustle and bustle of all kinds of different things, I forget that they just kind of need just a little bit of that time with Dad. So can I just say to you, don't blow it. Put it where it matters most. One of my boys they like to give Dad a hard time. And one of the things they like to say to me is they like to say to me, Dad, you're the second best dad in the world. And I'm always trying to figure out, you know, who's dad number one? I mean, Angela, what's going on? What's happening over here that I don't know about? But they're very spiritual, and they mean, because God is their number one dad. And, you know, can I just be honest with you? That's like the best thing in the world to me, is that my kids would make God their number one dad. That's what Jesus did. He had an earthly father, but he really wanted to do what the Father in heaven said. And what he came to do was just to show us who God really was. And if I could put it in an even more serious tone than this, I would say what Paul wrote in Ephesians 5:15, be very careful then how you live, not as unwise but as wise, making the most of every opportunity. Because the days are evil. Use your time wisely. Well, let's keep on reading there in verse 10, 11, 12, and 13. We'll see what happens next. It says, however, after his brothers had left for the festival, he went also, not publicly, but in secret. Isn't that interesting? Jesus said, hey, you guys go on, I'm going to stay here. But then he ended up going anyway, in secret, literally in Greek, in crypto. Now, at the festival, the Jewish leaders were watching for Jesus, and they were asking, where is he? Because why? I mean, they wanted to kill him, right? Among the crowds, there was widespread whispering, literally grumbling or murmuring about him. And some said, he is a good man. And others said, no, he deceives the people. But no one would say anything publicly about him for fear of the leaders. As we look at this moment in the life of Jesus, we realize that Jesus knew exactly who he was. He knew his identity. And if I could say one of the things to all of us as Christian people wanting to live out a Christian life, one of the things we need to do is we need to know our identity. Know who you really are in him. This is one of those moments where to me it's just so obvious that Jesus was being pulled in all these different directions. His brothers were coming up to him and saying, "Hey, Jesus, why don't you just go public and be famous and just make a big name for yourself and go to Jerusalem and do all these miracles?" And other people were saying, "Jesus, do this." And other people were saying, "Jesus, do this." And this is what people do in their life. One of the great challenges of being a person living in our world today is kind of knowing who you really are, who you are, what's your identity. And some people get their identity from other people. They get it from others. They "Who do you think I am?" And "Well, I think you're this," and then you're that for a little bit. And somebody else says, "Hey, you're this," and you become that. You just become a chameleon. You just are what anybody else wants you to be. And Jesus' brothers were tugging on him to do that. Some people get their identity from themselves. You know, I guess they look in the mirror and go, "Hey, this is who I am." I remember when we were kids, we'd watch the old Disney movie Pinocchio. And Jiminy Cricket would sing some song about "let your conscience be your guide" or something like that. And I always think about that. There's a lot of people in life, they're going through life and they're just kind of going, "I wonder who I want to be." Or maybe they're listening to pop music and it's telling them to just, you know, be whoever you want to be or be whatever you think you should be. Look inside yourself and that's where you'll find out who you really are. But you know what the truth is most of us, if we were to look inside of ourselves, we wouldn't want to be that person. And the question is, then how do we find out who we really are, what we really should be? The question is how? And the answer is Jesus, what he did. Jesus didn't look inside of himself and go, "I wonder who I should be today," and go meditate on a mountain somewhere all by himself thinking. He talked to the Father. Jesus didn't say to his brothers, "Hey, who do you think I am?" Or other people, "Who do you think I am?" Jesus was who the Father wanted him to be. And because he was on that mission, and because he knew who he was able to do what he did. Know your identity. But then, let's see what happens next. Verse 14. Not until halfway through the festival did Jesus go up to the temple. Now, the way this festival of tabernacles lasted for a week, so Jesus goes up on Wednesday or whatever. And he goes into the courts and he begins to teach, and the Jews there were amazed. And they asked, "How did this man get such learning without having been taught? I mean, what kind of a carpenter knows all this stuff, you know?" And Jesus answered, "My teaching is not my own." He's gotten it from the Father. "It comes from the one who sent me. Anyone who chooses to do the will of God will find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak on my own. Whoever speaks on their own does so to gain personal glory." See, Jesus is pushing back against that. "But he who seeks the glory of the one who sent him is a man of truth." That's who Jesus is. There is nothing false about him. Now, in this moment, we sort of find ourselves in that situation where Jesus is going to respond to the people who are trying to kill him. And to understand this moment, you've got to think back to what happened earlier in this gospel, in John 5, when Jesus walked by the pools of Bethesda, and there was a paralytic down there, and he needed to be healed. And Jesus said, just get up and pick up your mat and walk. And he was healed, and he carried that mat, and he walked through the temple courts with it. When the religious leaders saw him, they said, "What are you doing? You're breaking the Sabbath. Who told you to do that?" And he points at Jesus. And that's when they decided they wanted to kill Jesus. So look at the way Jesus responds as he's teaching. Verse 19, "Has not Moses given you the law? Yet not one of you keeps the law. Why are you trying to kill me?" And the crowd said, "You're crazy. You're demon-possessed. Who's trying to kill you?" They didn't know what was going on. Jesus said to them, "I did just one miracle, and you're amazed. Yet because Moses gave you circumcision, though it actually did not come from Moses but from the patriarchs, you circumcise a boy on the Sabbath." You see what he's doing here? He's saying, look, you guys break your law. You break the Sabbath. If a boy can be circumcised on the Sabbath so the law of Moses may not be broken, why are you angry with me for healing a man's whole body on the Sabbath? Stop judging by mere appearances, but instead judge correctly. Now this is an amazing moment. Jesus is standing in the temple courts. The crowds are there. The religious leaders are there. This is a moment where Jesus is the man of truth. He's standing tall. So can I just say to you one more thing today? Be somebody to look up to. I don't know how tall you are. I don't know how important other people think you are. I don't know where you fit into life. But no matter who you are, be somebody that other people can look up to. Jesus stood tall in this moment as a man of truth. He stood up and he spoke up for truth. Now, how did he do that? How is Jesus in this moment someone that we can look up to? Well, there's two things he did. One is by having moral courage. The phrase moral courage means literally just to be a person who speaks up and stands up for what is right. When Jesus started the Sermon on the Mount, he said it like this: "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Hey, blessed are you if something bad happens to you, people mistreat you for doing the right thing. Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. This is a moment of moral courage. Henrik Ibsen was a playwright. In the late 1800s, he wrote a number of plays, and he wrote one called An Enemy of the People. It was made into a movie in 1978. I don't think it won any awards, and I wouldn't necessarily suggest you go watch it. It doesn't look that great, but the story is fantastic. The story of An Enemy of the People is a play written about a town somewhere that had mineral wells, and so they made little spas, and it became a resort town, and everybody wanted to go there because they thought, hey, if I get in the mineral wells, I'll get healed. And other people just said, hey, I just like the warm water. And people just loved it. And this little town became such a place that everybody wanted to be at. Well, the star of the story is a man named Dr. Stockman. And his job is to test the quality of the mineral water. And one day he's doing one of these tests and he discovers that the water is dangerous. There's chemicals in it and pollution in it that if people continue to come there, that they could die. And he has all of a sudden to make a moral decision. Should I let anybody know about this? Because if people find out, they're going to stop coming to our town. And the people aren't going to want to get in the minerals and the spa business, and everything's going to go. So he goes and he talks to his brother, who's the mayor of the town, hoping his brother's going to back him up. When his brother hears this, he says, no, you've got to change your facts. You can't tell anybody about this. And pretty soon, everybody that finds out about it begins to put pressure on Dr. Stockman. Even his teachers in the school say, hey, if your dad lets everybody know about this, we're going to kick you out of school. His employer says, if you tell anybody about this, you're fired. People begin to say, we're going to run you out of this town. And there's a moment in the play where Dr. Stockman is contemplating this, and he's talking to his wife, and his wife's saying, are you sure you want to go public with this? I mean, we're going to lose our home, and we're going to lose our job, and everybody that we love and everybody that we know is never going to talk to us again. And all of a sudden, his two sons walk into the room, and he looks at them in the face, and he says this. He says, I want to be able to look my boys in the face when they grow up into free men. He eventually, of course, lets out the secret, and the whole community responds to him. But he stands as a man of moral courage. How do you have moral courage? How do you have backbone to do the right thing? How do you stand up when everyone's telling you to sit down? Well, you have it because, second of all, you have moral character. The reason Jesus could stand up with courage is because he, first of all, was a person of substance. The book of Proverbs, the book of wisdom, father to son, says, moral character makes for smooth traveling. An evil life is a hard life. Good character is the best insurance. Crooks get trapped in their sinful lust. You know, it's true even in scientific research. When they look at kids and their parents, boys and their dads, they find that character and characteristics are transmitted. They could take a group of 18-month-old babies, just infants, just barely more than infants, and they can give them candy. And researchers have found that the kids that are more generous with other kids had more warm and affectionate fathers. Scientific research shows that a close correlation between boys who were more generous in giving away their candy and those who saw their fathers as warmest and most affectionate. That's true in just general characteristics, but it's also true of faith. It's also true of our faith. Researchers have found that when you ask, how come some kids go to church and then some kids end up not going to church? The study of church attendance year after year has shown this to be true, that 72% of kids whose both father and mother goes to church remain faithful to the church. But if only mom attends regularly, only 15% remain faithful. Dads have this huge role in helping to nurture their children spiritually. It's like the Scottish poet who said, If I've been privileged to catch a more comprehensive glimpse of life than other men, it is because I stood on the shoulders of my parents. Parents have a huge impact in the life of their kids. I heard about a father whose boys had gotten in trouble in town, and he had heard about it, and he was at home, and he ran out the front door of the house, not to get the boys, but to find out who it was that had led them into this life of mischief. And as the old story goes, he ran down the street, and he ran through the park, and he ran through the woods, and he kept on running until finally he reached his destination, and he looked up, and there was the front door of his own house. And all of a sudden, he realized that the source of all their problems had originated with him. You know, there's no doubt about it that one of the things that Jesus wants us to do is to get on that straight path and to do the right thing. But do you know something else Jesus shows us about the Father? Is that no matter how many crooked paths we've been on, there is a loving Father who's waiting for us to come home. Wouldn't it be great if there was a God in heaven who right now is willing to forgive you of everything you've ever done, to graciously accept you into His arms? Wouldn't it be great to know on this Father's Day that there is a heavenly Father that loves you more than you could ever possibly imagine? Jesus came to reveal that man. He's a man of mystery. He's your heavenly Father.